Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Everybody, what is up? Welcome to In Soccer We Trust with your favorite former U.S. men's national team players. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and eventually Heath Pierce when he shows up. He's being fashionably late. That's why we call him Hollywood Heath. If you ever see Heath Pierce in real life, you got to call him Hollywood because he earns that nickname. Now, Charlie, we are 90 minutes away for qualifying for a World Cup and playing in the big dance for the first time since 2014. How excited are you for it?
I'm pumped. I mean, we saw what 2018 did to everyone, did to the world of U.S. soccer, right? So I think from my standpoint, it's like we're getting back to where we need to go, right? And so the development continues, the push for, I think, the U.S. men's national team to now make some noise at the World Cup and gain that experience. So when 2026 comes, we're in a great position with, you know, professionals who have had a number of experience, whether it's, you know, playing internationally or playing for their clubs and doing well. So I think the pool is just getting bigger and more dynamic. So it's exciting.
Yeah, there's a part of me that wants to jump in and say, and like look ahead to the World Cup, but we're not there yet. And that leads me to a conversation, Charlie, where U.S. soccer, someone at U.S. soccer gave a banner to the players in Orlando that said qualified on it when we're not technically qualified. Now, we're so close. I mean, Costa Rica has to beat us by 6 goals, and there has to be some crazy math for that to happen. But we could say back in 2018, we were also very close to, you know, it being almost impossible for us not to qualify, and we didn't qualify. So what do you think about U.S. soccer giving out that banner that said qualified when we're not actually there yet?
Well, they know they made a mistake there. It's That would be official. They know you can't do that. That is not a good omen. But I will tell you this: to be beat by 6-0 in Costa Rica. Now in 2009 we were down 3-0, and you know we were running like crazy, and it was not even close. They just capitalized on every chance they had. Almost, it's not crazy for them to get up 3-4-0 if everything goes right for them. Mm-hmm. You throw in a red card, you throw in a couple injuries, anything's possible. That's why we play the game. But to lose by 6 goals, I mean, the chances of that are very unlikely.
I agree. We've only given up 8 goals through the first 13 games of this octagonal phase. Now we're going to welcome in Hollywood Heath Pierce, who's fashionably late. As I said, hey Heath, how are you? How are you doing?
Guys, we got to stop with this multi-time zone thing, because I had this in my calendar at 2 p.m. Pacific time and blocked off. We've been jumping it around. I apologize for being late, but just to jump in on that note, I agree that was a mistake by U.S. soccer more than anything. I don't think there was any reason to hand that out other than the fact that they had like two banners. One said, thank you, fans, which is another banner that I think we should discuss of just – Could we not get a more creative phrase than thank you, fans, instead of the
how about suck it haters?
We could suck it haters. Suck it haters.
Like, and Paul Areola could be holding that one.
Yeah. I mean? Like, it's just one that says, thank you, fans. I think if you go over to the fans and you thank them, that's inherently what you're doing. We could probably add a different slogan, but maybe that was the only other one they had when they realized that they put up the qualified one. And you know what it's like. I've grabbed things before and you just hold it up and then you realize like someone was playing a joke with like whatever it said on the sign, you know, and things like that. So I think that was just a mistake and an oversight that obviously for US soccer is a little bit embarrassing, or very embarrassing, I think. And I don't think the US was in that position to be like arrogant or confident knowing that like in your face, we've qualified already. But yeah.
I mean, we're close, and I get why there might be some energy around that, especially because it was such an emphatic win, and we played well, and everything was going right for us. Why not? Yeah, just let them walk around with the banner, no big deal. But I do think that there could be some ripple effects to that type of decision, and it just doesn't look good. So, yeah, so I agree with both of you.
I'd say it's more just disrespectful. You know,
yeah.
It's not so much, I think everyone thinks they're going to qualify. Mm-hmm. But it's not official. It's just disrespectful to Costa Rica. It's a little disrespectful to everybody. And I think we have a little bit more class than that and dignity. And I think we have to finish the job first, especially coming after 2018. Nothing's set in stone, right? Until it's set in stone.
Hey, Jimmy, is Charlie wearing a crushed velvet jacket right now? Is that
he can wear whatever he wants. He's Charlie goddamn Davis.
Is that a Juicy Couture jacket you got on right now, Charlie?
And a Paramount Plus beanie on. So it's all working for him right now. But what I wanted to say is, you know what would have been bold if we would have ran around after the second game when we drew 1-1 with Canada wearing with a qualified. I want us to do that next time. Just be, you know what? We know we got this. We're so good. We're just going to do qualified after the second game of qualifying. Of course, in 2026, we get an automatic bid because we're the host. Now, before we break down this Costa Rica game, this big one that's coming up, and obviously there's a lot of implications, not only for us, but all the other nations that are competing. Maybe not all of them, but there's some intrigue there. We'll break down those games as well. We've been in a giving mood lately, and on last night's USA versus Panama recap, we gave viewers the chance, just like you, a chance to win a $100 Paramount Plus gift card, a subscription. And I want to give a congratulations. We have a winner, Jose Rodriguez. He was the lucky winner. Now, producer Dez has already contacted you with the details on how to redeem your prize. And you get to enjoy one of the biggest catalogs of live and on-demand content known to mankind. I'm talking World Cup qualifiers, Champions League, Europa League, Serie A, NWSL, NFL, movies, series, college basketball, the new Halo series. It's all popping off. Now, if you didn't win, don't worry. We're going to continue to give you the goods. But it would help so you have a better chance if you hit like and subscribe and do that right now. And then, obviously, if you're listening to this in podcast form, hit subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. I feel like you're going to butter us up if you're leaving us 5-star reviews. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just saying, you know, kindness goes a long way. So we're going to do another one here, but you have to put P+ in the comments and put your social media handle, okay? The @, without the @ though. Don't include the @, just your social media handle, Instagram or Twitter to be entered to win. So make that happen right now. We'll announce the winner after the Costa Rica US game. All right, boys, let's break down this game that we're talking about. We have a 6-goal cushion. Heath, I'm going to come to you first. The U.S. only given up 8 goals in their 13 games, pretty stout defensively. So before we get into lineups per se, let's just talk about what doesn't matter who we throw out. I don't think we're going to lose by 6 goals. And I, from a Costa Rica perspective, I should throw out there as well that they have a lot of players. I'm hearing 9 players that if they get one more yellow card, they'll miss out on that intercontinental playoff, which could be against Solomon Islands or New Zealand, but we're all thinking the Kiwis are going to do it. If you're the manager of Costa Rica, do you even take that risk and maybe risk any of those players? Because you don't want to miss out on that eventuality. And they should really just be proud, Costa Rica, for even getting to this point because they were left for dead for a while. Really been struggling to score goals, but have won 5 out of the last 6, put themselves in this spot. They've already guaranteed 4th because Panama's now out. That is an accomplishment in itself. So what do you do if you're Costa Rica and do you think they even try to go for 6 goals? I've got a lot of questions intertwined here. Heath, go first.
First of all, as the foremost expert on Oceania qualifying, New Zealand only beat Tahiti 1-0, and it took them to the second half to do that. So it's not going to be as easy as we think. There is a great leveler in any of these one-off playoffs. But that's a lot of complications that you just described, Jimmy, in terms of the potential for suspension, which seems a little unfair. But I guess it makes sense that they have one more game, whereas like Tyler Adams just had to get through this game and now he can play the last one. And it resets for the World Cup. That playoff sort of seems a little bit unfair that you have these players in danger. Having said that, that plays to the U.S. advantage. And there's not a lot. They kind of have to know that there's not a lot to gain from that, because if they, for Costa Rica to try to score six, at a certain point, the U.S. can just leave a bunch of players up and just go and score one. And for every two you score, you give up one type of thing, taking the risk. That I think that they're a little bit smarter than that, that knowing there is an opportunity, it is possible to score six, but the odds of that are really, really slim. Having said that, I've been down there. I watched the 2009 one from the sidelines. I was in the stands, didn't make the game day roster for that game. And it was, as Charlie mentioned, it was a long day, and it was start to finish, never ending, where Costa Rica just looked so good. Now, I don't think it was six goals good or anywhere close to six goals good, because that's a beating. Like to like the way the U.S. beat Panama and could have had more, like that was a pretty one way. And this, the U.S., no matter who they put out, I don't think would ever be exposed that much, considering the circumstances that Panama were in and had to take risks. I just don't see a world in which that could happen. So the team that they roll out, I could see being a balanced squad, maybe not their best, or risking I don't think they risk any of these players that if they're there, if they might have nine. So say six of them are probably starters, right, Jimmy? Or were nine of the 11 starters, like their best team in potential for suspension? I would guess that nine could be maybe five or six of them.
Sure, sure.
I just don't see why you start them and risk them for the game that is actually the most important game for your World Cup qualification campaign.
Yeah, so Charlie, you were played in that game against Costa Rica in 2009. Obviously, as you mentioned, very difficult. I've been down there. I didn't get to play against Costa Rica in Costa Rica at any point, so that's a little bit disappointing for me. I have a little bit of a regret. But I did go down there and play against Saprissa in the CONCACAF Champions League, and that is very difficult. Now, sure, maybe club fans are a little bit different than national team fans, but it's super intense, and they put you on surfaces that aren't ideal, and they're trying to gain any advantage that they can. But this one seems like both teams kind of know what the deal is here. I don't know if we're going to see that same type of intensity that maybe you were under. Give us some of your playing experience of being down in Costa Rica.
Well, all the fans are behind this team. And we talked about Azteca having that added bonus when you talk about the pressure from the fans, the supporters. It's right on top of you. And most players don't react, right, in the positive way. With this team, it's the same way. The whole country gets behind them. And they play to a whole nother level above what they're used to because of the fans. And the surface was turf. It was bumpy. It wasn't the best surface. And they could just run at you, and they were relentless. They also had, you know, Sabarillo, who I think at his peak was one of the more dominant CONCACAF strikers. Mm-hmm. They don't have that now. They had a little
bit. They still have that. He's just 39.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised he's not starting, to be honest. Yeah.
But you know, you look at some of the players that they had then, and they're still playing now. So they still have the respect, and they have the experience, which I think is not talked about all that much. Keylor Navas, Cecil Borges, and Brian Ruiz is that impact player off the bench. He can't give you 90, but he can give you 45. He can give you a solid 30, 40. And so when you have a group of players who know how to get results, especially in CONCACAF, which this team does, that's why this new coach who came in had set them up to succeed, because he said, we're going to focus defensively. We have Keylor Navas in goal. And then we don't have any big time, you know, strikers. We don't have a lot of pace, but we have Joel Campbell, who can create goals. He's good on the dribble. It's very small, but still strong. They can hold up the ball, and we're going to capitalize on set pieces. They do that extremely well. So they play to their strengths, right? This U.S. team going down to Costa Rica, it's not the same environment as it once was, just like Azteca. They also know that they have the six-goal cushion, but you can't play with that mentality. You have to play the way that they did at Azteca, the way they did at home. Play for the win. If you play for the
Bruce
win,
said they got to score goals in that New England game, and that went backwards.
No, they said we just got to defend.
They said they got to go out and score. We don't have to score.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You have to go score. You have to win the game. And if you play that way, it's always going to be a close game, or you're going to win because they're going to throw so many numbers forward. So I think in this atmosphere, the U.S. players will rise to the occasion.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how it goes. I feel like they can come in a lot more relaxed, obviously, because you know at the very, very, very least, you got that fourth spot.
You changing a lot of the team, Jimmy?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I was going to just I'm looking at when Costa Rica, Luis Fernando Suarez is his name, the coach Luis Suarez, and he's done a very good job of – lacking. And I just wanted to kind of give some shine to the Ticos here because they've only scored 11 goals in 13 mm-hmm. games. And the fact that they could potentially go into a World Cup with that kind of attacking prowess or lack thereof is pretty impressive. And it really speaks to how well organized they are behind the ball and their positional play and how difficult they are to break down. And obviously they have probably the best goalkeeper in CONCACAF history in their team with Keylor Navas. So you always have a chance with him between the sticks. So I'm kind of curious how they come out. But with all the yellow card stuff, what are they trying to do? What do they want to accomplish out of it? And are they going to try to go and beat us by six goals? I mean, they're actually closer to Mexico in goal difference. Mexico is hosting El Salvador. They just need to draw. Mexico just needs to draw. They'll probably get it because they can't score either. They've only scored two goals in their last four. So I'm kind of curious. Like, if you can get an early goal, maybe Costa Rica's like, all right, maybe we'll go for a second and see what happens. But if, and we just saw it with the U.S., if you maybe commit too many numbers, if you're a little bit reckless going forward, we're going to crush you going the other way. We're very good on the counterattack, and we prove that again. Against Panama, we got some players that can really hurt you. But I don't know. Are you going to start those players that are going to hurt you? I don't really know what Greg Berhalter is going to look to do, but I wouldn't make too many changes just for the sake of making changes. Mm-hmm. There's something about keeping the spine of the team intact so that at least there's some consistency in terms of how you want to move as a group, where we're going to hold our lines, all that type of stuff.
So I'd
see De La Torre again, but he jumps out at me.
At a minimum, Jimmy, are you saying that this is not a game to get experience for the team? This is still a fundamentally important game. It's not a, hey, roll out 3-4 guys who haven't gotten a run yet because you need them to get these games? Or do you think there can be a little bit of that balance? I mean, even Charlie, I would love to know your take on that too.
Well, I'll go first, Charlie. I'll say that if the World Cup was happening – yeah, if the World Cup was happening soon, I'd be like, let's keep rolling out our top 11 guys because we need to know and be building that trust and rapport. But also, in a weird way, because the World Cup's so far away, I guess you could play some guys here, but I don't want to make too many changes. The time that we did do that against Panama the first time around, we lost 1-0. We just didn't look – we didn't have any flow, any rhythm. It just looked like a bunch of guys that had – sure, they're good, but when you threw them out there, they didn't really have a plan or they didn't execute well on that plan. It's interesting. I bet you we see one center back change. Maybe Yedlin comes back in, so you get that experience. I'm curious to see if Adams starts again, but I would honestly just try to see out the first half with a pretty solid team. The fact that we have five subs, I think, allows us to potentially get more experience for some of those other players in the second half.
Charlie, Jimmy's all against the changes.
I am, dude. It just hasn't done well for us.
I think the key word here is balance. I think in Gio Reyna's instance, you're still having to nurse him back to full health. So starting him, even though he hasn't started the first two games, you're probably not going to do it because, again, you want to see how he reacts after these first two matches. So I see Timothy Weah coming back into the lineup. I see Yedlin coming back in the lineup because Shaq Moore looked like his hamstring was tweaked at the end of the game. I would not be surprised if Miles Robinson or Walker Zimmerman came off just because they have played two back-to-back 90s, even though I think they're young enough where they can, you know, be good for 90 minutes in the third. Luca De La Torre, for me, did enough to warrant another chance.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree.
He's someone who can get on the ball, play out of pressure. He's calm. Christian Pulisic, I could see him starting again because, again, we're talking about this is not a given. We're not qualified already. Had we qualified, maybe there would be some more changes, but
yeah,
the job's
sure.
not done That's yet. Different. So yeah. I think at 45, you assess where the game is. And then at 60, if you have the result or you're in the lead, then you can start to make some of those changes where you're getting some guys experience and minutes.
I'll jump back in because I'll say that if you bring – when I say changes, I guess it's just not – making changes just to make changes. If you bring Wea and Yedlin back in, they started against Mexico, so clearly – they know how to play with each other. They know how to play within the system. There's that instant chemistry, or maybe not instant chemistry, but developed chemistry between those two. Then I think you probably change out a center back, to your point. I could see Aaron Long coming in, maybe with Walker. I just don't think I wouldn't change both center backs. Yeah, then maybe no. George Bello gets a start. And then I think Acosta could maybe sit in there. He'll go in there and do the job. You give Tyler Adams a little bit of rest or whatever it may be. Musa will probably get a rest. You got De La Torre and maybe Gio Reyna can be there. I would like to see it. I mean, there might be, if we're going to take any risks in terms of partnerships or putting players maybe a little bit of a different spot, I would like to see Gio Reyna at the 10 and have Wea out wide on one side, Pulisic on another. And I would honestly, if you have a leaning of where you want to go with a number 9, I'd give that number 9 another run of minutes. If it's Pepe, is it if it's PFOC, if it's Ferreira, I think it's going to be Ferreira. I need more valuable minutes with him being in that spot so the guys continue to this is where he likes to pick up the ball. This is where he sets up in between the center backs. This is where he likes to maybe roll off the back shoulder. All those little things need to happen. And it's hard to replicate that in training, hard to replicate it in friendlies sometimes. But in a game like a World Cup qualifier, it's a different kettle of fish. So maybe Reyna, De La Torre, and Acosta I could see, or if you want Adams there instead of Acosta, there's that. I wouldn't mind seeing Gio come in with Weah and Pulisic and then Ferreira up top. That would be a nice special front four that I want to see in a game that still has some juice on it. Heath?
I'm seeing this comment from Joseph that he loved your point about trying Gio in the false nine. Do you mean false nine as in like where Ferreira is playing as a false nine, or false nine as in like a 10 playing under a like somebody part of the midfield? Do you mean that as like our high striker?
No, no. Right now I would say as a 10, like he'd be part of the three midfields. But what I said last night and in Soccer We Trust, and thank you guys for all your support, hit like and subscribe. I would say that in the false nine, I have him in where the Ferreira spot is, because it seems like the ask of our nine is to drop in the midfield. And that only works, though, if you have guys that are running in advance of that. So when Pulisic gets in behind, like we saw against Panama, when Timo Weah always does it pretty consistently, gets in behind, that is when it's
Charlie just hit you with that Dikembe Mutombo finger.
It wasn't so much at the thought that Jesus Ferreira comes and checks in so much. But last night, he made some great runs in behind.
Yes, true.
It was almost unexpected. Like, people are like, oh, he can do that? So when he did that, though, he started creating so much more space underneath for Christian.
Yeah.
And for Gio, for Musa. So I think when the more your number nine can do that, and it's being unpredictable. Yes, you can check, which is great because you can play the 1-2s, which you did with Gio in the second half, or to stretch and make runs in behind. You can't be one-dimensional. You can't only just check, and you can't always run deep. So the more you can kind of balance that within the game and have your teammates understand your runs, which I think plays to your point, Jimmy, give him another run. Mm-hmm. Let these guys understand how he plays. And if he's going to ride this confidence and allow him to keep developing and pushing the limits and reaching his potential, then great. Because we need a nine. Because no one is really – we've seen Pepe. He scored two goals in Honduras and the assist or against Jamaica in the first game when he came back in the second half against Honduras, his kind of announcement to the world, hey, I'm here. We've seen players have their shining moment, but it's not been consistent. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, it's play the hot hand until someone develops and does it match after match after match.
Yeah. I will say this. There's two things to this. One, obviously, we've got a lot of comments of people asking where Charlie is. And Charlie, I love what you've done with your house there.
It's really nice. Beautiful, the chandelier in particular.
Oh, no. The thing that really does it for me for Charlie's house is it's so big that if you look over Charlie's right shoulder, he's got an exit sign that says where to go. Like, that's an easy way to get lost in a home. It's just like knowing, like, hey, I get it. You know, like, there's a lot of rooms like this. Like, this is the way you want to go in case of emergency.
Man, this post-career stuff is going really well for Charlie.
It really is. This is my spring house. So I'm in Paris at Versailles.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you know, in exchange for wearing the Paramount Plus beanie, he gets to live in a house like that. You know what I mean? Life is good. But the point I was trying to get at with the number nine, Charlie, and I agree, for Pepe, for me, it's just a matter of getting his move. I think it's a bad idea where he's at Augsburg. I don't think they survive. Okay, let's see what they do in the summer. But I still don't think it's the right type of club for him. Like you said, when you went to France, when you said it yesterday on the pod, you went to a mid-table club. And there was something about that of like saying, you're going to get your chance there. You're not in this constant. And of course, like any club that's a mid-table club, a bad run of 2 months could have you flirting with relegation. But you're going to an established club that wasn't that. Augsburg has always been an elevator club. And so I think for me, it's just getting him into that situation. You play the hot hand now, and that should continue. Now, PFOC had his chance. He's going to be licking his wounds a little bit, not knowing that he had a big opportunity to score. But Ferreira, and I'm still not satisfied with Ferreira, but I at least like his output with the team. Like you said, his willingness to add pieces to his game that makes him more dynamic, because that's one of the things that we talked about as well, is how many pieces can he add in a difficult, like Luca De La Torre, what can he do in a difficult game? And that's why I say give him another run against Costa Rica, because I don't think he's going to do more harm than good, but we're going to see how dynamic he is in different environments to say, what other things can you do when we're not playing at home and the game is open and you're in a comfortable environment against a team that's got to take some risks that helps the team, contributes towards the team's success on that day. And I think the same for Ferreira in a situation like that.
No, I love that. No, it's a great point. I've got three things for everybody. The first thing is we're trying to give away a $100 gift card to Paramount Plus. So just put P Plus in the comments right now on the YouTubes and put your social media handle. You don't have to put the at sign because that changes things. Don't lose the at sign, social media handle, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is that'll enter you to win a $100 gift card. We're going to announce the winner of this gift card after the game against Costa Rica. And make sure you come back for that as well. Hit like and subscribe, all that good stuff. Turn on your notifications so you do not miss that. We want to give away the goods to you. That's first. Second, before we get into our starting lineups that you two want to see ahead of this game or at the game in Costa Rica, I want to talk about Christian Pulisic really quick because there's some fun stats about him. Now that he had this hat trick last night, he's got 21 international goals. He did it in the fewest caps ever to reach 20. Okay, it took him 47 caps to reach 20. At 23, he's the second youngest with 20 U.S. men's national team goals. Landon Donovan was the youngest. He's also tied for Bruce Murray for the seventh all-time on the U.S. men's national team list. Landon and Clint currently tied. Currently, I say. They're just tied on top of the list because they're not playing anymore. On 57 goals. And now with 12 World Cup qualifying goals, he's tied Eddie Johnson, EJ, for fourth on the U.S. men's national team list. So I just want to know from you guys, do you think Christian Pulisic will eclipse Clint Dempsey and Landon Donovan at the top of this scoring list with 57 goals? Now, it took Clint 141 caps to get 57 goals. It took Landon 157 caps to get the 57 goals. Christian has got 21 goals on 47 caps. Charlie, I'll come to you first. Do you think Pulisic will be our all-time leading scorer by the end of his career?
Oof. Because what it comes down to is health. If he's healthy...
Play in friendlies either.
If he plays in friendlies and he's healthy, I think he has a really good shot at beating the record. But again, nothing's a given in this game. Nothing. And you have to have the desire, the attitude throughout to keep that hunger throughout, because he's already reached levels that both Landon and Clint didn't in the club, in the club perspective, right? So if he continues to play and he wins Champions League and he's doing all these things, is the national team always going to be important to him and central, right? That's another question. Is he going to stay healthy enough to play in all these friendlies and games that are going to be coming up? I do think if he does, he will eventually take the record.
What's interesting is if you extrapolate him, he's on 47 caps. If he times that by three, he'll have the same amount of caps as Clint Dempsey, but he'll have scored 63 goals if he stays on this current rate. He's averaging 0.4 goals per game. Heath, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree with Charlie. I think that's the thing about Clint and Landon that put them in that position is the longevity of their national team careers is being on the field. I don't remember a long period other than Landon's sabbatical that he wasn't healthy and in the national team. I don't remember a long period where Clint Dempsey wasn't healthy and in the national team until they both decided that they were done with the national team. You know, and I said this recently on one of our pods, Jimmy, is like, you know, the world's best athletes aren't just the best athletes. Their bodies are the best compensators. You know, they're able to just continuously rebuild themselves in real time that keep them available and fit and on the field. Now, I also think Christian Pulisic is at an earnings level that if he decided that he wanted to build a team around him that took care of his body 24 hours a day. I played with Thierry Henry. He had his own trainer in the locker room. He had a trainer that came to his house at night. He had people around him. He had infrastructure that was built to sort of maintain him, similar that we're seeing to Ronaldo, Tom Brady, all these top athletes that have a team of people like top tennis players do. They travel with a team. Then I think that can help in his career. I think he's in that level of stardom and wealth that he could. And there are certain things you can't control, right? Injury. Some people are just a little more breakable than others. But if he had that level of professionalism and was willing to invest in his future, then I certainly think he breaks the record.
What's interesting, and there's a good comment there from Felix who said, well, we don't have any qualifying games heading into the next World Cup. And I'm like, what? That's going to set him up to play technically easier, less pressure games, but we're going to have a bunch of friendlies. It's not like we're not going to play at all. So there could be room for him to score a bunch of goals. He could play against Solomon Islands. He could play against Solomon Islands, okay? Oceania expert, and he could score seven on them, and all of a sudden he's
He's
injury prone. They're going to say, hey, why? Let's keep him at his club.
Why risk him against Solomon Islands?
Risk him the travel and all that type of stuff?
Or because you don't have World Cup qualifiers, all your friendlies are against Spain, Italy, Brazil, Argentina.
Yeah, that's fair.
And those are the games you're not scoring. boatloads of goals. And Christian is, you know, you look at Clint Dempsey, how he was able to kind of catch up to Landon and close that distance and almost pass him is because towards the end of his career, he moved up to a number nine. Mm-hmm. Christian will never move up to as a number nine, you know, just because of his
Great point.
So I think when you look at Landon, that's the more comparable player just because of their style and their size and the way they play the game. I think Christian could be a striker in a 2-2 forward system, but I don't see that happening because we look at how the game has changed.
Right.
So he's going to have to stay healthy and be a winger or an attacking midfielder and continue to score goals against those opponents where, you know, you're going to get opportunities like a Panama, a Trinidad, and especially when you're playing at home.
I want to give a shout out to Landon Donovan because 57 goals, but he also leads the men's national team in 58 assists. 57 goals and 58 assists and 157 caps. That is pretty ridiculous. Pulisic only has 9 assists so far through his 47 games. All right, we got into that conversation. I wanted to lean into it, wanted to get your guys' thoughts on whether he can do it or not. I don't know if he's going to do it, all things considered. I think he'll score some big goals for us during his career, but I don't know if he's going to eclipse 57 at the top. Let's get into our starting lineups.
Hey, before Heath, by the way, on those goals, I was just counting it in real time, and it's really giving me a headache. He scored, I think, 33 of those against CONCACAF opponents. Clint Dempsey did. I'm not sure what Landon's numbers are, but 33 of his 57 were against, and a couple of them multi-goal games against your Guatemalas, your Honduras's.
He's got they all count, right, Charlie?
they all count. Take advantage of it.
But to go to Charlie's point, whether those are gold cups where you can really get on a run because you can get 6 games and really have perhaps an unbalanced schedule. You can get a Cuba at home or somebody like that, no disrespect to them, or a Barbados or whoever it is. They're all getting better. The whole region is getting much better than it was before. But if you're a striker and you can open up that, you can rack up a few. But wanted to point that out to Charlie's point that you could play only Spain's or you could play against your regional opponents, or who knows where it's going to be, but you certainly need a balance to be able to get those goal scoring opportunities. Sorry, Jimmy.
No worries. And then also I should add to the Landon versus Clint debate. Clint only had 21 assists. So if you're trying to do that compare and contrast, I think they're both special players and we were lucky to have them for so long on the national team, but maybe a conversation for another pod down the line. All right, Charlie, I'm going to come to you first. I put Heath on the hot seat. So the last time we asked for some projected lineups and if we started the World Cup tomorrow, who would we go with? Who are you going with if you're Greg Berhalter against Costa Rica, knowing that we just can't lose by 6 goals to qualify for the World Cup?
It's a tough question. I think it comes down to how many of these guys are struggling after the performance versus Panama at home, because at the end of the day, you need guys who are fresh. As much as we want everyone to play, so I think Shaq Moore comes off because he looked like he was struggling with the hamstring, and it's an easy replacement because DeAndre Yedlin was your starter in the first match against Mexico.
So can I ask you about Shaq Moore while we're on him real quick, Charlie?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't want to belabor this point too much, but has he increased his status in the national team as a potential backup? Because I thought his performance was pretty solid.
Yeah,
he definitely increased his I think value.
We're 4 deep about there now, and at least 2 aren't coming from that group.
At least 2. So I definitely think he increased his value because you look at Serginho Dest, he can play on the right and the left. That hurts the outside backs opportunities because you have, you know, players who are flexible who can play on both sides. Kellen Acosta is another player who can play right back, and Tyler Adams. So you're only going to take 2. That's it, because you know you can
maybe
because you have the flexibility. So I think he comes back into the lineup. Yedlin, I would keep Zimmerman on just because he's just an absolute beast on set pieces. In Costa Rica, their strength is set pieces. Miles Robinson, he came off. Aaron Long came on. I don't think Aaron Long is quite up to the speed of the international game. I think he's done a tremendous job in Major League Soccer so far to start this year with the New York Red Bulls. I would start Miles Robinson again. Anthony Robinson, he's a machine. You play him again, he starts. Musa has looked tired, and he looked tired at the end of the Mexico game. That's the player I would rotate out. Now, whether you play Gio Reyna there or you keep Luca De La Torre there and you pair him with Tyler Adams is 100% on the field, on the pitch.
Yeah.
And so it's either Kellen Acosta, who goes in at the for Musa, or Gio Reyna. At the right wing, Timothy Weah comes back in. I would keep Jesus Ferreira there, and Christian Pulisic is your starter.
Okay, I like that. Heath, what are you saying?
I want your lineup, Jimmy.
No, I like going last. Okay, fine. Oh, man, thinking goalkeeper. Man, I would really like to give Horvath a run out, but I'll probably stay with Stefan just for at least for the first 45 minutes. I want to kind of use that as my context and my preface that this is my lineup for 45 minutes. And I think based on how it's looking, we can bring in five subs, which I think is a lot, which is nice. But I'll go with Yedlin right back. I'll say Walker. I think he seems a little bit more vocal in terms of organization than maybe Miles is at this current moment. I think Miles will get there and definitely be a little bit more of a presence vocally. But it seems like Walker does a lot of that organizing, and I really like how they've been holding their line. I could see Walker and Aaron Long being paired just for the reasons that Charlie said. He came in as a sub for Miles. Maybe they wanted to see what that looked like. And then I like Anthony Robinson. I think I keep that the same, but consider maybe bringing on George Bello at halftime if you want. In midfield, I'll go with Acosta. I'll let Adams chill. Acosta knows the deal. He's been here before. He's got plenty of experience. I'll go De La Torre again, and I'll put Reyna in the middle of the field. I'd like to see Gio. It's just to see what that looks like. Then Weah on the right, Ferreira up top, and Pulisic on the left.
Okay. I'm going to go with Stefan just because these are valuable games to keep Stefan on the field just because he doesn't play for City. That any game that I can get him is a game that I think makes him better as a player if he's looking healthy. He looked like he had a few weird little movements yesterday, that one getting hit, two, that little hamstring movement that he had. I'm going to go with Yedlin back on the field, left back Jedi, just because I think it's just still the smart thing to continue to get him games if he's feeling good. Center back pairing, I'm going to go with Aaron Long and Zimmerman. I sub out Aaron Long probably in the 50th or 60th, depending on the situation. Mm-hmm. Give Eric Palmer Brown another run next to Zimmerman. Just again, not to rush him back too much, not knowing the circumstances. But if not, then you can always default back to Miles Robinson if you have to. I'm going with Acosta, Luca De La Torre, and. Man, I don't know what was another
Busio could be there. I had Reyna. Some other options that could potentially play there. Yeah, Busio did come in.
Yeah, I could see Busio, but I feel like again De La Torre and Busio on a defensive day, not my favorite lineup. But I'm going to go with De La Torre just in terms of form that he's right now. Sure. Acosta, and yeah, I could see there being a shout for Gio Reyna into that spot, a place to get him, but also allow you to have your Areola or I'm going Areola, Jordan Morris, keeping Pulisic in the hole, just knowing again another injury concern for him. This many minutes, can we use him or save him if we had to?
J-Mo
bring him in?
Smooth coming in. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I could see that. And then sorry, not Areola. I see Timo Weah coming back in on the right, and then Jesus Ferreira up top.
Got it.
Yeah, I like the Jordan Morris shout just because you're talking about counterattacks. And Costa Rica is going to throw everything forward to try and get an early goal and see if they can get in the game early. Yeah. I think within 45 minutes, you'll know where they stand. Yeah. Are they trying to go for the game? Are they throwing everything forward? Or are they complacent with just competing and saving their guys for that World Cup qualifier?
Yeah, the first 10 or 15 minutes, and even their starting lineup for Costa Rica is going to be very intriguing. So I'm excited to see what they roll out and to see what we roll out. If you want to give us your lineups, hit us up in the comments right now. Or if you're listening to this on podcast form, hit us up at ISWTPod on Twitter. Who do you want to see start in this game against Costa Rica? Knowing that it's going to take a pretty big miracle for Costa Rica to get an automatic spot for us to fall into fourth. But still, we haven't automatically qualified. And before we step into the other games that are happening here on the last match day of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, I want to give a shout out to our sister podcast, The Attacking Third. They are debuting a new weekly live show on the YouTubes dedicated to the women's national team. So join Lisa Roman and former U.S. women's national team midfielder Lori Lindsay at 4 p.m. Eastern today for the very first episode, the world premiere of the U.S. women's national team hour, as they discuss all things United States women's national team. I am definitely liking and subscribing that channel. Moving forward, it should be a lot of fun. I love Lori and Lisa and all of their insight. The Attacking Third is a tremendous podcast as well. Just wanted to give them a shout out. We wish them the best of luck as they continue to grow that audience. A very passionate audience for the U.S. Women's National Team. And there's some stuff going on in NWSL, too, between Ashlyn Harris, Nellie Krieger, and Trinity Rodman. I mean, I love what's happening
it's
right
great.
There.
Yeah. I'm here it's for great. It, man.
I got plenty of time for it.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So we got three games here. Panama versus Canada, dead game. Panama's eliminated. Canada already qualified. Not much to say there. I think, I don't know who they're going to roll out. Probably just going to be Smart there. Jamaica, Honduras, another dead game. We'll see how it goes and who plays
game.
And who gets
dead game.
I mean, it's dead. There's just nothing to play for. But these guys, I guess, are still now trying to prove that they should be part of the national team moving forward, especially with 2026 now going to be on the horizon as they look to really set what the core and culture is going to be of these respective teams. So there's a lot to play for some individual players, but in terms of its implications on the table, doesn't mean much. So let's talk about Mexico versus El Salvador. Heath, I'm going to come to you first. Mexico just need a draw against El Salvador, but El Salvador, we can't sleep on them. They're pretty plucky. They're tough to beat. They did have a little bit of questionable defending against Costa Rica at home to lose 2-1, but they fought back after giving up that good first goal. And there is something to them, and I appreciate what Hugo Perez, their manager, has done with the team. They've given them an identity, given them a spirit. They're really well organized, and I like what he's done. Do you think they have enough to potentially get something at Azteca, knowing that, and I'm saying a win at this point, because that's the only thing that can really hurt Mexico. If they get a draw, they've automatically qualified. Now, Mexico struggling. We talked a little bit about it last night. They don't really have a 10. They got Charlie Rodriguez. They got Herrera. They got Edson Alvarez, who started the last two games. I probably mix up the team a little bit. Hopefully get some younger, more vibrant, looking to go forward type players outside of the three sixes that they got sitting in midfield. But that front three of Tecatito, Chucky Lozano, and Raul Jimenez must be starving for that type of service to get the balls in good spots so they can do their thing. What do you expect out of this game, Heath Pierce?
Well, with all the games kicking off at the same time, I would just say that you know, Mexico don't want to play the goal difference game either. That if they compete in the way that they will, I don't see them really giving up a whole lot to El Salvador. El Salvador doesn't – I'm always confused with El Salvador's approach. It's gotten a little bit less clear to me over time throughout the World Cup qualifying. They seemed very hard to score against early on, but as it's gone on, it just seemed a little bit more – you know, they were a little bit better when Eric Zavaleta came on in the last game, but still just giving up chances that I think are preventable, you know, a little bit kind of just shutting off – that like classic CONCACAF shut off for 1 second, a team punishes you. And so I don't really see them having the ability to do that. Now, if it was a must win, I would be a little bit worried for Mexico, but the fact that they just need to draw, that's the part that I think is just the real deal for them, is that they can play a little bit more rhythmic. They can take their time. They can wait for their moments. And I think that will actually lead to them probably scoring multiple goals in this game and winning pretty comfortably.
Multiple goals. Charlie, do you agree with the sentiments of Heath Pierce? Wow.
Well, Mexico needs to win because they don't want to be put in that position, and it's obviously not a guarantee for them either. I'd like to see them try and figure out a way to get Diego Lainez on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Uriel Antuna has also looked pretty good with Cruz Azul. So figuring out a way, even though he's not a finished product, he still creates chances. It feels like Mexico's missing that player who's just going to be a little bit fearless in the way he plays and just run at opponents and get in behind. It's almost like they're waiting for that perfect opportunity. And when you look at how Chucky Lozano plays, he's always waiting for that ball over the top. And instead of sometimes being a little bit more proactive and getting the ball early and dribbling at players, seeing what we, you know, a combination play, a lot of that's missing in the front three. I don't know if that's due to Raul Jimenez not yet quite up to speed. He looks a little bit slow or off a step. And the midfield, again, is weak. They're missing that bite and they're missing the direction. Edson Alvarez is great with Ajax, but he's just – he does his job and that's it. I think with Mexico, he's asked to do too much. So they need to figure out a dynamic. I think it might mean a whole system change, to be honest. And they have to figure out ways to get Lainez and Antuna on the field, because those players give you something different. And that might be just what they need to get them going, to give them that spark.
Yeah, I don't think that Tata Martino is going to roll out the same 11 three games in a row. I think obviously he's a little smarter than that, and that's been proven. But I think he's going to stay true to his brand, which is it's not going to be aesthetically pleasing. They're probably going to squeak out some 1-0 result, even though they might have deserved to win by more goals. And people are still going to want Tata out, even though he got him qualified for the World Cup. That just seems to be the narrative. And I mean, remember when that guy, we were talking so highly of that guy, he won 23 out of their first 25 games and everybody was loving Tata Martino, and how quickly that changes, that narrative changes. I just don't see him changing too much. But I think to your point, Charlie, it would be nice to see just some diversity in their midfield, right? They have three guys that kind of do the same thing. Let's see a proper eight. Let's see a number 10 in there and see if that unlocks a few things. It's a good opportunity for them to try it. I just don't think Tata Martino is going to do it. He seems super stubborn, and I kind of respect how stubborn he appears.
But Jimmy, in qualifying, by the way, Tata's only got two losses. The U.S. has two losses. He's got four draws. So does Canada. So does the U.S. He's only lost to the two teams above them. It's a really, I guess,
I know,
it is Mexico and the standards are high, but like, you, all three teams at the top right now have had really good campaigns. It just so happens that there's a few teams that had really bad campaigns that allowed everybody to take points off of them. But yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go predictions. I'll go first for the two games, Mexico, El Salvador, and Costa Rica, U.S. I will say 1-0 Mexico for all the reasons I just mentioned. And then in Costa Rica, U.S., I'll say 1-1. I think it'll just be let's not get anybody hurt. We don't need to get any yellow cards. Let's just be smart here. And if we score first, I think Costa Rica will punch back and make it 1-1, and then it won't go anywhere. Those are my two results. Heath, what are you saying?
I'm going to say 1-1 also, Costa Rica, U.S. I wanted to say 0-0 because I don't think Costa Rica is going to expose themselves. And then Mexico, I'm going to say a convincing 3-0 win just to sort of stamp their way in.
All right. Well, that would bring a smile to Tata Martino's face. Maybe people would get off his back for one post game. And Chuck, how about you?
I'm going to go 1-0 U.S. in Costa Rica.
Ooh, I love it.
And I think I'm going to go 2-0 Mexico over El Salvador.
That's solid. I like the Dos Aceros shot with Mexico. I will say, because especially if El Salvador is trying to get back in the game, they could leave themselves open to a counter. Chucky Lozano is very good at finding those pockets of space. The 1-0 in Costa Rica, though, would make history. We've never won a World Cup qualifier in Costa Rica before. So hopefully from your lips to the soccer god's ears, I want to see that happen. But guys, that is it. That is another episode of In Soccer We Trust. I appreciate Heath. I appreciate Chuck, I appreciate producer Alex and producer Dez for all the hard work that they're doing behind the scenes. And of course, we appreciate all of the people that are watching and loving the content and hitting like and subscribe and following us on podcast form or on the YouTubes. You guys are the very best. And we will see you next time for our recap of Costa Rica versus Estados Unidos in the last game of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. We are so close to going there, and we're going to be celebrating, hopefully, in a really big positive way after that game. So we'll see you then. Thank you for watching.
Hasta luego, muchachos. Hasta luego, muchachos. I'll send you one, Charlie. I got you, man. I got you. I got you. Don't worry.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.